Welcome to the You Can Make a Living in the Music Industry podcast from Nashville, Tennessee. I am your host, John Martin Keith. Celebrities, working class musicians, and people who work behind the scenes in all areas of the music industry will share their stories, encourage you, and give practical advice of ways you can make a living doing what you love in the music industry. This episode is brought to you by Eden Brook Productions. Eden Brook Productions is the company I founded to help musicians grow in their craft. Are you a songwriter, but maybe you've been told your songs aren't quite there yet? Or are your songs ready, but you don't feel stage ready? Or maybe music is your passion, but you feel imprisoned by your day job and you don't know what to do next to make your dream a reality? Well, Eden Brook Productions is here to help. We offer consulting services via phone call, Skype, and FaceTime. And for the You Can Make a Living in the Music Industry podcast listeners, we're offering an introductory one-hour consultation special. Click on the link in the show notes to contact me, and let's get you making a living in the music industry. Hey everyone, welcome to the show today. I had the wonderful opportunity to be invited back to Live Fest up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, to do some live interactive podcasts at the festival. So for the next four episodes, we're going to have a live interactive audience at Live Fest, and I'm excited for you to hear what they have to share. This week, I'm talking with Matt Roberts and Joe Piver from Jeff Roberts & Associates in Nashville, Tennessee. JRA is a booking agency that works with some of the biggest names in Christian music, including We the Kingdom, For King & Country, and Skillet, as well as breakout artists Ann Wilson, Katie Nicole, Kane, and many, many, many more. We are discussing the process of booking an artist into different types of venues, the cost of touring, and the differences in booking new artists versus established artists. I hope you enjoy our conversation today. Get your pen and paper and get ready to take lots and lots of great notes.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Live Fest. How are you guys? Everybody good? Everybody enjoy AJ? He is amazing. So my name is John Martin Keith. From Nashville, artist, worship pastor, producer, blah, 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 all that stuff that everybody talks about all the time. But I also host a music business podcast called You Can Make a Living in the Music Industry. And everybody always laughs at that. They're like, really, you can? Yes, you can, because otherwise we would not be here at Live Fest right now if there were not people doing this for a living, right? So I am excited to introduce to you guys from Jeff Roberts & Associates, Matt Roberts and Joe Piver. Would you please give them a hand? They're going to be my guests today. Thank you guys for coming in and talking with me. Sort of short notice. So in your programs, you would have seen Corey Asbury was scheduled to be my guest today. And some unforeseen circumstances, he is not going to be able to join us at Live Fest, unfortunately. So they're working on all that stuff, I believe, to get that taken care of. But these guys are closely associated with Corey because they do, their company is the booking agency that books Corey Asbury and tons of other artists to come to Live Fest and go out and do concerts and all that kind of stuff all over the place. So say hello. This is Matt and this is Joe. And so, yeah. And now what we're going to do, so with the podcast, what we're doing is we're talking to the guests, and they're sharing their story, kind of explaining to you where they are come from, how they come up in the music business, what they do for a living in the industry, and to share advice with you. So let me ask you this. How many of you guys, are there any of you here that are musicians, are artists, want to be artists or musicians, or want to work in the music business on any level? Maybe you want to do booking, maybe you want to do publishing, or maybe you want to be a sound man or whatever it is. So we're going to give you an opportunity to ask them some questions here in just a few minutes. Is that cool? If you want to ask some questions, this is an interactive podcast. You guys are going to be on the show that will come out later on this year. So thank you, gentlemen, for jumping in and being here. Yeah, I appreciate it. Here, yeah. So you're with Jeff Roberts & Associates, and Jeff is your?
Jeff is my father. That might be obvious, not obvious, but I've been in the business about 20 years now, and of course my father started it in the mid-80s, actually, out of the back of our house when I was just a kid playing with toys in the back room, and he was putting together events and concerts with churches and festivals like this all over the country, and yeah, just grew up in the business and have seen the company evolve over the last almost 40 years, to what it is today. And COVID was a crazy couple of years for a lot of people in the live music space, festival space, but we're glad to see it coming back and thankful that all of you are here. It's what makes all this work.
So can you explain a little bit about the booking agency process? What is a booking agent? So for our audience, in case they don't know, for our listeners listening to the podcast, they're not familiar with how does an artist get able to come to play a show, either at a festival or at a church or a venue or whatever. How does that kind of work? Can you guys talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so the way it works, for me personally, I've been booking artists at LifeFest for 15 years now. I've got 21 artists playing this weekend that I work with. Everybody from Freaking In Country, the We The Kingdom, to Dante Bo, artists like Skillet. So we're the people that gets them to the stage. So all of our artists have needs and have desires. We want to play 100 shows a year. We want to play 50 shows a year. We want to play festivals. We want to play theaters. And they give us their plan for the year. And then what we do is go find those places for them. So for instance, here, I'll make a call to Maddie, who does the booking on the main stage and some of the other stages. And I'll say, okay, what are we doing this year? Who are we going for headliners? And we start at the top and usually work our way down. So when we started for this year, the first act we booked was, actually, the first act we booked for this year was We The Kingdom, 45 minutes after their set played last year.
That's right.
Sitting in a tent.
Yeah.
And then we start filling it out. Okay, well, who's going to be on the other night? Okay, well, we want to target for King and Country because they were not here last year. So then what happens is Maddie and I talk about all the financials, all the deals, all the travel, where they're at, where they're coming from. Are they even open on that date? And we go through that process, and then they do what they call an offer. They send us an official invitation. It's like buying a house, except you're buying a block of time for someone. So I'll get the offer, and then I, as the agent, will speak with the artist or the manager, and we'll discuss all the details. And it's not as simple as, oh, they're giving us the money that we need to put on the show. Should we do it? It's figuring out the bigger plan. Okay, is this a market or area we're doing a tour date in? Or does the festival work for what we're doing? Does it match our vision for the year? Some artists will say, okay, one summer I'm going to play nothing but festivals, and the next year I'm going to focus on all touring and not do a festival. Or they may say, I'm going to do international. We have a lot of artists that are overseas right now because there's a bunch of, this is the time international dates happen. So then we'll run it through all the filters, figure out if this is what we want to do. And essentially, once the artist makes up their mind and says yes, I call back Maddie and say, hey, we are confirmed. This artist is locked. And then we start going down the list from top to bottom, filling out the main stage. It's a beautiful, chaotic mess to get it all done.
Okay, let me ask you this. You're saying that some artists will pick and choose, you know, where they want to play or when they want to play. I want to do only festivals this year. I want to do only tour dates or churches or whatever this year. I'm assuming that the bigger the artist that's got more reputation, they've been around longer, they get more say in those types of things as opposed to a new artist that you guys just bring on. Do you guys... I know We The Kingdom is technically still a fairly new artist, but they just exploded, you know, obviously. But, you know, for King and Country, they've been around for a while, so they can pick and choose basically what they want to do at this point in their career. So if an artist that you guys is a new artist for you, you've recently signed them, do you give them that freedom to kind of pick and choose how much they want to be on the road, or do you guys really push them and say, hey, you're a new artist, you need to be out? You need to be playing 100 dates this year, maybe 200 dates this year? Or do you say, hey, they only do 20 dates, and that's fine with us? How do you determine how that should work out?
Yeah. So it is a bit of a exchange early on, because some artists, so we work with Ann Wilson as well, and as she kind of came out of the gate, similar like We The Kingdom, things just really took off quickly. And next thing you know, her calendar this year specifically is like almost 130 some odd dates that she's playing, which is a really, really busy calendar for a new artist. And she wanted to be busy. She wanted to be out. She kept getting these great opportunities and just basically kept saying yes to great opportunities. It's hard to say no to that as it comes your way, especially as a new artist. for Kenan Country's at the point now where they're able to be selective. It's way more strategic. We are considering the things Joe mentioned, which is, can we play this festival this year? Because we might need to be playing this tour date in this venue. And you've got to think through all of the other pieces. And you're looking out 18 months most of the time on those artists. You don't get a chance to just make quick decisions. Everything's got to be processed much more intentionally and think about the long range goals that we're trying to accomplish and be considerate of the times that we're visiting an area. You wouldn't keep visiting an area three or four times in the same year. You'll have kind of diminishing, you know, once somebody's seen them, they probably aren't going to see them again 3 months later.
Sure.
So you certainly break that up. With Anne, you know, we work with Katie Nicole. She's another artist that has really kind of had this very quick trajectory. And so she is also seeing a lot of different opportunities and is probably more wanting to play more than what would be the range that a Casting Crowns or for Kenan Country would want to play at this point. And really, some of it's built around you get opportunities. The other part is relationships. So much of the business is built around investing in people and having the opportunity to for their ministry to kind of do what it's intended to do, which is be out in front of people and connecting to people. And the more you're able to say yes and the more you're able to work maybe harder in this first few years, there's real value in having that privilege.
Yeah.
So she's playing a lot. Katie's probably going to be playing a lot. For Kenan Country, though, probably does 50 to 60 fewer events in a year than some of the busier artists out there, and Casting Crowns would be similar. So they're very strategic, very specific. New artists, though, yeah, playing
and,
a lot.
You know, all of us have jobs and careers. Well, for an artist, touring is probably the most substantial part of their income. And when you think about it, everyone goes, oh, well, the artist makes all that money. Well, if you think about an artist that's on stage with a five-piece band, that's five people on stage plus the artist. That doesn't include their tour manager, their front of house, their lighting director, their stage manager, their bus driver, the whole crew. You can have artists, like for instance, Zach Williams right now is traveling with 22 people on the road. That's 22 people's full-time job just based off of live shows. So for a lot of artists, they'll figure out how many dates they're going to do based off of caring for every member of their team and making sure everybody. That's why last year we did one, or 2020, we did one not too far from here, the parking lot tours during COVID. We were doing the parking lot and drive-in tours. We were so deep into that and designing this, our team. We probably did 300 plus drive-ins or parking shows between the artists that we work with. And it wasn't because the artists wanted to get out and play more. It was because people like Zach and people like Casting Crowns wanted to make sure all their team members didn't miss a mortgage.
Yeah.
So it was a big part of keeping a lot of artists and their families together during that time.
I'll add one small thing to that, too, is also, they did was incredible. But the it's like a church. You see a church that has maybe 100 members, the staff it takes to run that and the overhead to run that is different than a church like a Zach would be a large church. There's 22 people on staff full time that are trying to provide for, it's how they make a living. They're trying to provide for their family through this. So the costs and expenses look very different for a new artist that might only have one person on staff versus somebody like Zach that's got 22. Or for Kenan Country, many times it's multiple buses on the road. Buses
sure.
are... The rental costs are crazy right now. The bus drivers are crazy expensive. And we've been hearing rates of $1.75 a mile to run these buses down the road right now, which is almost double what it used to be. So costs have gone up with like everything right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit? I don't want specifics because that's nobody's business on the specifics. But as far as like what artists get paid to be out on the road. So you're talking about a new artist or a newer artist, or it doesn't have to be that. You know, I've been doing this for 25 years and I'm usually out doing acoustic solo shows. That's kind of where I live for the most part because, you know, if I take a band with me, then that costs more money, which I would love to have a band with me all the time, but the venue can't always afford that. So when you have an artist that's doing more solo type stuff, as opposed to Zach Williams, who's got 22 guys on the road with him, do you guys, as Jeff Robertson Associates, or just booking agencies in general, is there sort of a price range that is like, is there a minimum price range for a venue to bring an artist in? And is there a cap that, you know, nobody ever really goes beyond this, no matter how big the artist is? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, from the stand, I'm going to talk from the standpoint of the music business in general, not just the Christian music business, mm-hmm. Because they're very, very similar.
Yep.
Except for the fact that Billy Joel can charge $500 a ticket, and if we charge more than 50, people say, I can't believe you charge $50 to go worship God.
Right.
But that's a different story. But we do have that dilemma where in the Christian music business, we are trying to be servant-hearted, to love on people, to not make it outrageous, to make it where everybody can afford to come. So what that does is, for instance, in a 10,000-seat arena, a artist and the biggest artist in Christian music, if they sell it out, it might sell $300,000 worth of tickets total. Now, that's not to the artist. That's total. While Billy Joel can go play the same venue and sell $6.5 million worth of tickets because his tickets are much higher. So what happens is in the Christian music world, because of us, the way we're trying to run things and being good stewards of what God gave us and taking care of the people, it drops it down super low. So we've got artists that can, most of the time we don't do love offerings and things like that just because the artist, they have a guaranteed amount it's going to cost them to get there. Like Matt was saying, $1.75 a mile for a bus right now. Well, just looking at $4.50 a gallon on gas, if they go rent an SUV and drive 500 miles to a show, they're at least $500 into it. And if they bring anybody to help them, you got to pay that person. And the new artist, it might be a couple hundred bucks you're paying someone to help, or you might have a friend that comes with you. But real quickly, that can get to be about a $2,000, $2,500 break even just to get an artist out on the road to play one show. And so it probably starts in that $1,500 to $2,000 range, and it can just go up to numbers that are astronomical based off of what you can actually sell in tickets.
Yeah.
Because the way we look at it, an artist value is basically what they can sell in tickets divided by two.
And the other thing on that is if you're playing a church, you know, church often is going to say, hey, we want to have you in. We're not charging you anything to use our facility. We want the ministry here in our city. When you start to grow beyond as far as the crowds that an artist might be bringing would be beyond a church's capacity in most cities, you're suddenly forced to go into an arena. Well, arenas don't care really. They're just looking to be able to pay their bills and make money. So, you know, arena could cost you $50,000 just to open the doors. It could cost $100,000 just to open the doors or beyond that, depending on how valuable the, like if you're in downtown Chicago, you're paying union, you're paying to rent the building. The building costs, they're in high demand. So the building's charging more than really what our market is comfortable paying. But it's something you get forced to do if you're going to play and be able to accommodate 6,000, 7,000, or 8,000 people that may want to come see this event in one city. You're forced to go into one of those rooms. All of a sudden, your base cost just to walk in the door before you've even sold one ticket could be genuinely and literally hundreds of thousands of dollars that somebody's put into the event just to start it. And then you've still got to sell tickets and cover all the costs and all of that. So it can get very expensive very quickly as soon as you go beyond just playing within the church, which we love playing and partnering with churches. There just comes a point at times, Keenan Country is one of those that has largely just stepped into doing mostly arenas when they go into cities just simply because of the crowds that they're drawing exceed
sure.
church venues within that city.
Right, yeah, so. That makes sense. I want to open it up. Let me ask you this. If there's anybody in the audience, does anybody have a question? Terrence is going to come around and ask a couple of questions if anyone's interested. So I saw some hands go up a minute ago that so people that are want to be artists or they are artists or they want to do something in the industry. So if you've got a question for these guys related to something like that, we would love for you to do that. Will you stand up? What is your name and ask your question there?
I'm James from Little Chute, Wisconsin.
Hey, James.
I'm curious to know which artists you handle. For example, my daughter would love to see 21 Pilots or John Mark McMillan at a Life Fest. However, you may not have those artists signed to move and shove them around. So out of curiosity, who is the most experienced, oldest artist that y'all handle? And what are some of the up-and-coming new artists that are hot and growing?
Great question. Thank you.
It's kind of a, for the oldest, experienced, wisest thing, it's kind of a two-part answer almost, because we've been working with Skillet for 20 plus years. But Skillet didn't start blowing up to what Skillet is today until about 12 years ago. And then we've also been working with Casting Crowns from day one of their career, which is next summer will be their 20th anniversary of their first album releasing. Wow. So for us, that's kind of the wiser, older, and it's weird when you look at John Cooper and Skillet and Mark Call of Casting Crowns. They're so different, and to think they've been doing it they've been doing it the same amount of time. Skillet actually a little bit longer, and Mark's got gray hairs, and you won't see a white hair on Cooper's face, natural, of course. And then a bunch of the new artists that are coming. Katie Nicole, who's here today, has kind of blown up real quick with her. Her big single, I think it was how many weeks at number one? 13, 14?
Yeah.
14 weeks. Number one, there's a gentleman here that'll be here Saturday named Ben Fuller.
Yeah.
And Ben Fuller, he's got a top 20 song. It's his first single that just released. But you talk about a guy that, a ministry heart, guns a-blazing for Jesus guy. He's this big, burly, tall guy from Vermont. And he is the most loving, gentle, kind person you've ever met. And make sure to check out his set, of course. Ann Wilson is going like this still. Kane is going like this. Who am I missing on some of the newer ones?
I think you covered most of them, yeah. And just quick little, we mentioned some of the artists that we work with, but Matthew West is an artist that we work with. Corey Asbury is an artist that we work with. We've actually been able to work with the Bethel leaders and the Bethel music events. You see those out on the road. Any of the events those artists have been playing, like for Casting Crowns or for Kenan Country, I mean, their whole career, really. If you've seen it playing here in Wisconsin or other areas, it's because our organization, very likely maybe Joe specifically, was organizing that event to come into the state with other people that are involved in that process. So,
yeah, because I'm 15 years now and I work in the state of Wisconsin. So if it's been any of artists on our roster in the past 15 years that you've seen, has probably come through my desk. And
Joe, let me ask you guys this: when it's a newer artist that's coming out, do you guys start getting the influx of phone calls to your agency saying, hey, we want Ann Wilson or we want Ben Fuller to come? Or are you cold calling, as an agency, do you guys cold call venues and say, hey, we got this new artist, we would love for them to come? What's the percentage of that happening, and which do you prefer?
I like it when my phone rings off the hook.
Sure.
And how that happens is the Ann Wilsons, is the Katie Nicoles, is Kane. Those artists, when they first come out and they get that first big single, and signing an artist is almost like gambling. You don't know. We love the artists and sign artists based off their heart. We want artists that align with us when it comes to the heart standpoint. But it's a gamble. Will they make it? Will their single work? We've got plenty of artists that we don't work with that are not in the music business 2 years after they start. But for instance, Dante Bow, the phone literally rings off the hook. We have more incoming calls and emails on Dante Bow than any artist on our roster. And he's here tomorrow night. Katie, what happened with Katie is we started telling people the story of who Katie was before In Jesus' Name got released to radio. So we start telling people and start priming the pump and getting ready. Hey, you should have her. You should book her for this year. But what happened with Katie was it went viral. Nobody expected it to go as fast as it did. They didn't, have plans to release the single when they did, but it went viral on TikTok, and then the single went released, and now, like I said, 14 weeks, number one, and now we don't have to call anybody. Everybody's calling us. But then there's a lot of artists that we do have to call out on, newer artists, and it's harder when you're trying to explain somebody, hey, this is so-and-so. Because a lot of artists, they are not getting their hit on their first hit. Katie, Kane, and Ann Wilson were all lightning in a bottle, where their first songs went number one. For Kenan Country, what most people don't remember is their entire first record and their entire first tour, they had no number ones at radio. They didn't get their first number one at radio until their second album hit. And at that point, they had been building the show for people. I remember them playing this stage because they their flights got delayed. And the only place that we could play was like at 10 o'clock at night here, the first time they played here. And the only reason they were here was because they were backing up their sister, Rebecca. And that's how we ended up here. But people started seeing the show and thinking, this is great, this is great. Nobody cared about the big hit single. And you built them differently. So the first 2-3 years of King and Country, we were calling people saying, please book them. We'd love for you to have them. You're going to love them once you see them. And then opposed to Ann and Kane and Katie, it's like, bam, bam, bam.
Sure. Do you guys ever sign artists that are not on a label? Do you sign indie artists, work with them, or do you only work with signed artists?
Mostly signed artists, really. Okay. The reason for that is what we're doing is really national and international. We've actually got Riley Clemens trying to get back from Norway right now. We had her overseas doing a tour in Europe.
Okay.
So I think if you're independent, most of the time that reach is going to be much more regional. And I think there can be value in an early stage of your career of actually doing all of these different roles, management, even booking your own events. There's no one's going to be more put more time and more energy into you than really yourself, right?
Right. Yep.
I just think as a rule of thumb, that's always the case. So early on, if you're able to continue to do that, there's so much value and so much return in it. And you learn the other roles of people on the team. So if things continue to grow, where maybe you would sign with a label and you'd be trying to grow something like an Ann or a Katie that is really going across the country, you're prepared, I think, better prepared than a lot of other people that would not have had that benefit of learning what you're, if you have a team supporting you, the best thing you can do is know what all of your team members are actually doing, know how difficult their job is and how can you support what they're doing best.
Sure.
At the end of the day, every artist, whether they like it or not, essentially is becoming a small business owner in the end of the day. And so the better you're able to understand that process of business and managing relationships and people, mm-hmm. it's actually going to work to your advantage. And so I think there's a gain early on in doing it yourself.
Sure.
Until it grows to a point of kind of critical mass that what we can do can bring a lot of support to what they're doing and energize it at a greater level out across the country and even across the world.
Absolutely. We have time for one more question, audience question. There's a lady, young lady right here. Stand up, tell us your name.
Hi, I'm Emma.
Hi, Emma.
I just wanted to ask, going into the music industry, what would be like a good first position to like get your career off the ground or get your foot in the door?
It kind of just depends. I get asked this question 100 times a year. On top of booking at JRA, I'm actually a music business professor at a school in Nashville, college. And all my students ask that same question. And it really depends on what you want to do. So if you're more into creating music, you know, maybe more on the label side. If you like logistics and working one-on-one with someone, probably in the management side. If you love the live show, it's the booking side. But for instance, all agencies will have assistants. And what will happen in that assistant role is you'll get in and you'll start figuring things out and you'll see things. And you'll be like, oh, I like this part, I hate this part. I love doing the numbers, I hate doing the numbers. I like going to shows, but I hate this part. And the labels will all have startup positions too, where you can come in and do things from working on the recording side to the publishing side. And with management, you know, management's the catch-all of everything if you're wanting to work more direct than an artist. So there's a nice organization in Nashville called the Gospel Music Association. They always have a listing of every job, big and small. But it really, like I said, it really depends on which way you're focusing.
I would do a lot of internships and volunteer opportunities that might exist because you're going to be exposed to so many different types of roles. It could really help hone in what is the thing that, you know, like anything in life, it comes back to calling. You know, is the Lord calling you to do something very specific? And I think sometimes that becomes clearer just as you pursue it. And that pursuit could just be interning and volunteering and kind of learning more about the industry and different roles.
Yeah, we require for the school I'm at that all music business students do at least 3 internships and they can't be with the same type of company. So you can work with a management company, you can work with an agency, you can work with a label, you can work with publishing. so you can get in there and see all of it. Because for some side, people think about the agency side, and they think, oh, all you do is go to concerts. My headaches do not come from going to concerts. My headaches come from artists getting sick 24 hours before the show happens, which is why we're on this stage and not Corey Asbury today. So there's a glamorous side of it, and then they get in it and realize, oh, this is not glamorous. This is hard work and stressful. So getting into the multiple things kind of gives you the idea of, okay, what do I actually love the most? Because it's like everything. You want to do what you love. For us, we love what we do.
Do you guys, I know that usually when you're doing internships, you have to be at a music college in order to get the internship. Do you ever see instances where someone who's not going to college that wants to do an internship, do you guys allow that? Or do you know other businesses that do allow that if you're not getting it for credit?
Yeah, I just think if you have a passion and a calling to be in and around and support Christian music, then for us, it doesn't matter what college you're at really at the end of the day. I think sometimes it can almost be a negative because I've seen students go to some of those music business programs at colleges and coming into the industry thinking, like, I've got a good enough foundation. I know enough of what I'm doing that I'm prepared. And really the reality is any job you do, when you graduate college, you're actually getting another degree. If you're really going to focus on something specific in life, you're getting a new degree, bachelor, master, PhD, and it's going to take you 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years to really become more of an expert in the field you're pursuing. And I think no matter what you're in, musician, producing, writing, anyone would tell you the same thing, right? Rarely would somebody just come right out and just be able to be really successful. It does take a lot of time to learn a craft and become an expert at it. And that's really what the mentality should be. School's going to give you a great foundation. It's going to prep a lot of things the right way. But then you've got another, you know, 2, 4, 6, 10 years ahead of you. Joe and I are still learning, right? We've been doing it for almost 20 years, and there's new things coming at us every day. So you're constantly growing your other education, which is specific to that field.
And when we first started doing the drive-in model and started figuring all that out and looking at Google Earth images of places, and then on the phone FaceTiming with someone in a parking lot, measuring parking spaces while we're Google Earthing, and then trying to figure out how we can make it work. It was basically, we started our career over in 2020 doing something completely different.
Did anybody in here go to the Wisconsin State Fairgrounds and see for Keenan Country?
We did
the drive-in.
And we did the baseball stadium up here. So, yeah.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, it's a long story, but that happened kind of through Joe and I and a couple other people in our company trying to figure out how to make that work.
So that's you're learning firsthand. This is what it takes if you want to go see an artist. Or when you guys do come to see artists, these are the guys that are doing that, and this is sort of the process that those things happen. So I want to thank you guys for being here on the show. I'm super grateful and I wish we had more time, but I look forward to getting to know you guys better. And say thank you to Matt and Joe. But thank you guys for being here. Stick around. We got more coming up in just a couple of minutes.
All right, guys, there you have it. I hope you had a great time listening to our conversation today. I hope you take what we've talked about today and find ways to apply it to your career as well. Please be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you listen to it on. And please share it with all of your friends so that we can continue to get this message out to everyone around the world. Remember, Edenbrook Productions is here to help if you need consulting services via phone, Skype, Zoom, or FaceTime. Let us know how we can help you begin to make a living in the music industry.